Lindquist, and I'm the Director for Studies in the Division for Church and Society of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. That means that one of the areas I'm working on is the area of sexuality. I'm basically director of the department through which the social statements of the church are developed. And this week, we're going to be dealing with the topic of sexuality and weaving in and out of some of the understandings and some of the questions and some of the issues that are raised in this particular booklet. It might be helpful to begin if I could just get a sense of how many of you have some familiarity with this particular booklet. Okay, some amount of familiarity. As was announced this noon, it would probably be helpful for all of you to consider purchasing a copy. We're not going to be working through this as we might if we had a 6, 8, 12-week series in a congregation, but I'm going to be doing really three things in terms of the purpose of the series this week.
When's the movie coming out?
There's a movie? Never know. Why, are you looking for a role in it? Let me just say something about some underlying purposes of this week's session. First is to get us into a discussion of some of the kinds of materials that are touched upon in this particular booklet. And so it will, in a sense, be roughly related to the study of human sexuality and the Christian faith. And certainly, as I approach that, I need to be very clear about my own social location or my own particular lens that I'm seeing this. And that is certainly as staff director of the study, and therefore the one that works with the task force and also coordinator of the drafting team, but also one who at this point in the progress of this is receiving the hundreds and hundreds of various kinds of responses. So, for example, 2 weeks or so before I left for Holden, our office was sometimes receiving 50 letters a day, and I'm not quite sure what the pile is like at this point. I would say at this point there's probably at least 700 or 800 responses we've received, some of which are responses for a whole group of people who study it, maybe 10, 30, in one case 60 people, so that one has to multiply that many times. And so in that particular position that I'm involved in, that means that in lots of ways I feel like I'm at the crossfires on these issues. Last week, a week ago, I did a session on the book called Culture Wars by somebody named Hunter, and I find that book very helpful because that's very much the situation that I find myself in at times. Namely, he makes a case for how issues of sexuality and family and abortion and the string of issues that cluster together around those matters, but those are really the issue around which some major, major culture wars are being fought in our society these days. In fact, he alleges that the viciousness and the divisiveness of those issues in our day surpasses everything that's hit us since the time of the Civil War. Now that might be a little exaggerated, but believe me, standing where I stand, or sitting where I sit, I'm used to being in the fireside room and sitting, so it certainly feels like a very accurate kind of analysis of what's going on. Certainly for some liberation from some of the traditional understandings and guidance regarding sexuality is seen as an issue of faith. And then for others, any loosening of traditional sexual ethics is seen as an issue of faith or an issue of heresy. In fact, I've seen quite a few letters of people who say, well, even raising the questions is itself heresy, because the answers are obvious, and therefore any faithful Christian wouldn't dare to question what God has clearly set down as the constant, unchanging rules for all time and eternity. So that kind of milieu is certainly one that I operate out of right now, of trying to make sense of those competing dynamics and trying to be sensitive to those two. So in that sense, I find myself much more in the middle of the politics of this issue than when I was teaching for some years at the seminary or serving as a parish pastor, where obviously these issues were ongoing concerns and issues of discussion then too, but not with all the dynamics that are a part of it in terms of where I presently work. Secondly, I'm going to, as we move through this series, try to do some thinking, or I would say some thinking in process, about some of the issues lying behind the responses. In a sense, I've done that already in the last couple of minutes, of saying, hey, you know, what does the vehemence of the response to these kinds of issues in our society, what does that say about our society? What's going on in our society? What is it about people that are so stirred up about these various issues related to sexuality? And so that's going to be some of my thinking out loud, and it's at that point and in other places where I really want to invite you in the conversation, because I'm looking forward to this week as a time when we can try to make sense of what's going on and try to grapple together with what is a faithful sexual ethic in our day, and that is something that I see as a collaborative process that we want to be involved in together. And so thirdly, I'm interested in hearing from you and the experiences and the perspectives and the insights and suggestions that some of you have. And so if we don't get enough time for all of that in these sessions, I invite you during the next 5 days to grab me around the bell or someplace outside and share some of your further insights or reflections with me. Tonight I would like to, let me just say a little bit more word of process, particularly for those of you who aren't familiar with how the ELCA goes about these things or what this is a step in the process of. We have a 17-minute member task force that's been meeting for about 2 years, and it was the feeling of the task force that we really wanted to produce first a study that could help people within our church grapple with these issues and to raise questions related to issues of sexuality in our own day. Responses to this will be part of what helps inform the work of the task force in the next step of the process. Namely, after December, we're going to be working on developing a first draft of a social statement, which will, on the one hand, try to indicate how we as a task force have been hearing from the church, what sense we've tried to make of that, and then provide more of a position proposing, much briefer kind of document, probably something about 1/10 the size of this. And that then would be discussed and considered in congregations and synods and other forums of our church over the next year or so. After that, a proposed social statement would eventually be developed. And so 1995 is the date when a social statement at this point is scheduled to be voted on at our churchwide assembly, which is the gathering that meets every other year and is the gathering at which social statements of the church are voted on. Social statements provide a basis for this church's corporate policy on some matters, but they are not binding on the conscience. They are intended to be persuasive, not coercive. In other words, it's not a matter of saying, well, if you don't agree with the position that a social statement takes, you're somehow less of a member of the ELCA. They don't have that kind of canon law kind of status, as would be true, for example, in the Roman Catholic Church. So anyway, that's just to give some of you a sense of what this is, a step in the process of moving toward. I want this evening to just say something about three matters that will be some pump priming to get us involved in some discussion about these matters in a more general, what are the the waterfront issues that you are particularly concerned about? What are the matters related to sexuality that particularly are a concern to you? First, I want to say something about the changing phenomena of sexuality. Now, that very statement probably causes some of you to say, you know, gee, you know, people from Chicago really are crazy. I mean, you know, sexuality's been around a long time. Obviously, if it hadn't been around a long time, we wouldn't be here today, and lots and lots and lots of generations of people wouldn't be here. And yet, the fact of the matter is that the concept of sexuality is actually a fairly modern concept. Anybody want to make a guess as to when sexuality was first listed in the dictionary? Any guesses?
1927.
Not quite that late. I don't know the exact date, but it was in the late 1800s. And it was first, at least the evidence that I've found, is that the Oxford English Dictionary first listed the word sexuality at that point. And it was connected with the rise of especially psychiatric reasoning and considerations of sexuality, which tended to take the place of the previous wave of what had been anatomical discussions of the sexual organs, and therefore the medicalization of that realm that we today refer to as sexuality. And with the emergence of more psychiatric considerations of sexuality, there was an increasing realization that sexuality involves far more than just the anatomy, far more than just biology, but involves psychological and cultural and all kinds of other factors. One of the reasons it is difficult to try to say, well, how can we have a sexual ethic today that is consistent with what Christians have had for centuries before or what is rooted in the Bible, is that what we mean today by sexuality isn't necessarily what people in the past were talking about. I mean, first of all, the very word sexuality is not found in those earlier kinds of documents. And most of the time when people say, well, we've got to look at what people meant before, whether they're talking in biblical periods or the ancient Greeks or all kinds of other periods of history, what often is involved is turning to matters of, well, how they talked about family and family lineage and the importance of having children, progeny being almost an absolute mandate in many societies, and certainly in many societies even in our own day. And it had to do or was intertwined with matters of economy, certainly not too far back in our own national history, the whole matter of having kids so that, you know, we could run the farm and therefore having kids and the sexual activity that made that possible being a matter of survival. And certainly if one reads a lot of the material in Hebrew scripture, there's certainly an understanding of the need and the divine mandate to populate the land. And certainly there was therefore some political motivations involved with that also. Or sexuality having to do with certain activities of the leisure class. So there are certainly lots of ways in which that reality is referred to, but the actual concept of something discrete or a set-apart topic called sexuality is itself a fairly modern phenomenon. I think it's important for us to have also, as we're beginning, some sense of some conceptual clarity about how words like sex and gender and sexuality are used. One of the shorthand ways that I sometimes think of it is that sex is something, oftentimes we, in popular conversation, refer to sex as something we either have or we do. And sexuality, on the other hand, is something we are. It's more holistic. It is a complex reality of how we are in the world as male and female beings in our relationships with one another. So the word sex, as at least I'm defining it, and as it's defined in this particular booklet, has to do with our physiological identity, with our chromosomes, you know, how many X and Y chromosomes, and with genital structures, with reproductive organs, with hormones, all those various things that give us a sense of being male or female. And obviously for some people, some real confusion because it's a mixture of those physiological kinds of factors. Gender, on the other hand, has to do with the humanly created meanings that we give to sex. It is how we perceive ourselves and live out our identity and our roles as males and females. Let me give you the definition of sexuality, or the sense of sexuality as it's conveyed in this. It's very difficult, I think, to come up with a thoroughly adequate definition of what sexuality is. On page 5, our sexuality is our way of living in the world as male and female persons. We are bodies created by God, sensual human beings who yearn for relationships with others. Physiological, genetic, spiritual, emotional, social, economic, political, cultural factors are interwoven in our sexuality and in what it means to us. Sexuality can involve intimacy and warmth, erotic energy and creativity, sensuality and pleasure, as well as procreation. And certainly there's variation in terms of how much emphasis a given culture gives to one or the other of those dimensions of what sexuality involves. Our sexuality plays an important role in our lifelong experience as human beings in relationship with one another. Sexuality is a part of who we are as young children, and certainly it is a part of who we are until our dying days. And so sexuality is to a significant degree socially constructed. We think about and we conceptualize sexuality differently today than did people in earlier eras. That doesn't mean everything is different, but it does mean that we have to exercise some caution lest we too readily assume that what we mean by sexuality can that easily be read into what people 200 or 500 or 2,000 or 5,000 years ago might have thought of in terms of that realm of experience that we today refer to as sexuality. So sexuality is a historical concept, but I'd also want to suggest that it is located in place and in culture. One of the reasons that one of the things I think we need to be very clear about is coming to grips with why is it that we tend to be so obsessed with sexuality in our day? And by we there, I'm meaning a rather specific reference, namely what most of us in this room happen to be, namely Western people, people who live in the United States, people who are predominantly white and probably predominantly middle class. One of the things I've discovered in the last year or two when I try to tell someone from another country what are the various projects we're working on when I mention, well, yes, we're working on a social statement on sexuality. And I get this blank stare. A social statement on sexuality? And as one African said, well, why would the church have to work on a social statement on sexuality? I mean, sexuality, that's like doing a social statement on eating or sleeping. You know, it's like, that's, you know, a natural kind of, it's, sure, that's a part of what we're about. And there's all kinds of customs and mores and practices, some of them rather unquestioned. And if you dare to question them, you're thrown out of the community. But certainly, in many African societies, a lot of practices that of polygamy and a whole host of other practices that some of us in our Western white cultures would find rather abhorrent. But the whole thought of a set-apart topic of sexuality or an arena of life that we refer to as sexual just doesn't make sense because of the kind of worldview and all the rest that other cultures are often operating out of. And so certainly there's that response, or the response of don't break the taboo and even talk about this topic. And I think that's a factor that quite frankly plays itself out in a lot of our communities in this country too. Certainly I grew up in a family where my mother to this day said, what are you looking at? You're working on doesn't quite want to say the word out loud. And certainly as people begin to talk about this and do the study in congregations, we're getting lots and lots of interesting reports back of people saying, finally we've been able to break the taboo and talk about some of these things that we've been concerned about for a long time. Now obviously that varies depending on the part of the country and probably the size of the town and a host of other kinds of factors, but certainly that sense of not wanting to talk about this because it's somehow breaking a taboo, something we should be silent about, even though we know, yeah, obviously it's something that is a part of who we are, but we don't talk about it. I think for some people, particularly some Europeans I've talked with, it's, well, what's the big deal? You know, why bother talking about it? Well, of course, you know, but why is it that you Americans are so obsessed about sexuality? Certainly, I think there's a real need for sensitivity for how the kind of power issues that arise when those of us who are white or who are European Americans initiate discussions about this in some other multicultural communities, particularly in some of those situations where there has been some very, you know, a very rough kind of history. I'm thinking about the interconnections between race and sex in our society, some of which came up in some very painful ways in the Thomas Hill hearing, and the kinds of ways in which racism and sexism have been interconnected in some very painful ways in our nation's history, particularly during times of slavery. I've also found, going around the country, that it's not typically the crucial issue or the crucial priority issue in cultures that are African American or Hispanic or Asian American or Native American. In some it might be, but I think in many cultures in our society today, there are basic issues of dignity and respect and justice, basic economic justice issues that are far more pivotal kinds of issues. And therefore, again and again, I realize that those of us who are white are perceived as engaging in a white middle class diversion from the important issues of injustice that fester and often eat away at our common life. So I want to just pause for a few minutes and hear some responses that you might have to this this number two point here. How do you experience or perceive sexuality as a changing phenomenon? Or is that something that that you don't buy? How do you see it having changed, maybe even in your lifetime, or at least from the time when your grandparents were growing up? Observations or reflections on how you see sexuality as a changing phenomenon.
It's moved into the public arena much more in terms of the media, the arts, and everyday conversation.
Other observations.
Further to that, we teach it in school. I mean, when I was in grade school, elementary school, whatever, it was, you know, it was health, it was, you know, properly brushing your teeth.
I don't even remember the word sexuality, you know, hearing the word probably until after I was an adult, and maybe even, you know, in the last 20 years.
Mm. So much more recently than the late 1900s.
Sexuality is different from sex different from sex or sexism or gender or whatever sexuality is.
I think partly too, the women's movement a lot it has had some impact in that we talk about sort of the abuses that have happened, but that's become more part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. So it has become at some level a justice issue, and now I think as we begin to talk about different lifestyles, that it becomes more a justice issue than it was in the past. I think it was sort of let's not talk about it, let's keep it close up. Mm-hmm. And now when you look at it more as a justice issue within our communities, we need to keep that.
Just a word on that. One of the interesting things, and I think one of the commitments that the task force came to early on, was seeing that issues of power in relationship to sexuality, and especially abusive use of power, is a key ethical issue at stake in a way that it simply was not touched on at all 20 or even as recently as 10 years ago when churches were making, well, maybe 10 years ago it was, but 20 years ago, there was very little recognition of that as a central ethical issue, maybe passing lightly over it, but certainly not with the impact that those issues are felt in our day.
I think that sexuality in families, dysfunctional sexual, including family, child abuse, that sort of thing, was talked about. It was just a whisper if you heard anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago. And I think the other thing is the, kind of the explicit gynecological aspect of sex. It's, you know, Playboy magazine, that was a breakthrough, I think, in terms of how what you saw in popular literature. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, there was Esquire magazine, I think, was the raciest thing, but they had women portrayed. I don't know if they were naked, or we call that, but at least close to being, or the mask naked. But then Playboy kind of had a breakthrough, I think, in terms of what you saw in literature. We call that in literature.
As a parent with children that are 25 and down, I think it's the biggest area of change. Well, there have been a lot of big areas to deal with, but it's a huge area to deal with in terms of what I, at 50 years old, felt that I would carry into life with me in terms of my beliefs and agenda that I would pass on to my children. It's nothing that I believe at 25 for my 25-year-old exists for him today, basically.
Hmm.
And so, as a parent, to remain relevant to what your children are doing is quite a challenge.
I think children are becoming more aware of sex and sexuality at a younger age. I know as a second grade school teacher in Minneapolis, we have to teach about AIDS, and we also have programs, Bad Touch, Good Touch, about sexual abuse. And so even, I have some children in second grade who, well, for instance, this year when we were doing AIDS, one boy said, well, I know how Magic Johnson got AIDS, and I mean, he proceeded to tell us, you know, he had a theory, and it was pretty right on. Mm. So some of the kids are pretty, even coming into second grade at 7 years old, I mean, they already... that at 7 years old, I didn't have even a clue about it.
I had just the opposite reaction, which is, and I don't know if it's because of where I grew up and when I grew up, but I grew up in San Francisco in the 60s as a Unitarian, and experienced a lot of just nudity amongst everybody and a lot of open sex and changing partners. And for me, as an adult, I feel like things have become much more conservative from what I experienced in a lot of, I mean, there was a lot of sexual experiencing and, you know, exposing children to things at an early age, and the church was doing that, and, you know, and it seems like for me, it's been just the opposite, that things have been less.
People can have very different readings about what the so-called sexual revolution of the 60s either was or wasn't.
Uh-huh.
You know, some people who certainly see, well, now, yeah, we had all that experimentation, all that freedom, now there is need for more order, whatever, more conservative. But then others who see, well, see, you know, the church is continuing to ask those questions, so the church is on the same treadmill as was everything that the sexual revolution of 20, 30 years ago, what it was about. Very different readings of what that period of time meant or means for us today. Other, Dan?
I'm struck also with the emergence of different sexual minority communities, and I know in my own community, the gay and lesbian community, when you put up here the changing phenomenon of sexuality, and I look back at the last 40 years or so on gay men and lesbians in our community, and the amazing change and development of different models of relationship from when that community first emerged after World War II to where we are today with different parenting relationships and so forth. And so, and that's a very short amount of time given the scale of history we're talking about, but there's been quite a change just within that minority community as well.
Okay, let's, Bob, do you want
to? Just a quick comment. It shocks me how some of the literary issues about censorship, not terribly long ago, 30s, 40s, even 50s, were over language that every seventh grade student might be using today. And how the type of things that kids see in films, in slasher films, when they're real young, is just so incredibly dramatically different from what was even seen by adults 30 years ago.
Okay, we'll come back to some of that, I think especially the media, the commercialization of sexuality. Some of you have kind of beat me to the draw here in terms of this last point. Let me just share some initial reflections, then again invite you into the conversation as to why sexuality is such a big issue these days, particularly for Western American, probably particularly for white middle-class people. I'm not saying limited to that, but I think, again, based on what I was saying before, and particularly for Christians. I'm not going to be talking a lot about theological, biblical, ethical perspectives today. We'll be getting into that as we move through the week. And one of the reasons I'm starting where I am is because I think it's very important for us to do some reading of where we are as a people, as a culture first, in order to understand the significance of some of the Christian tradition in relationship to these issues. But particularly if we think of how this has become such a big issue in the churches, I'm struck by the fact that in 1991, the issue that the religious news writers from all the various news media voted as the top issue, the top religious news story was the churches and sexuality. Now, our friends who are Presbyterian certainly helped that, seeing the sexuality study probably took a lot of the flack, a lot of the firestorm. I think a lot of things that were said in there were things that Christian ethicists have been talking about for some time. For some of us, it wasn't totally new kind of stuff that they were talking about. But the kind of firestorm that that generated was certainly something that, we in the ELCA kind of learned from and said, whoops, you know, what can we learn from that? And yet, I think even though we try to do some things differently, the very raising of the issue is something that stirs up just enormous flack in our society and in our churches today. I don't think there's any simple answers to try to figure out why that is, why the very raising of issues of sexuality stirs up so many things. In fact, we may not be able to acquire much clarity about that, except as future historians in hindsight look back and assess what was going on in the 1990s. But let me just suggest some threads of a possible analysis. First of all, I think it has to do with a lot of the individualism and rootlessness and sense of powerlessness that many in our society feel. Powerlessness not just by those who clearly are without power, but even those who have some power but at times feel like they're powerless. I'm thinking of a lot of middle class folks who say, oh, there's all these forces going on, and you know, I don't know what my company's going to do. I may have a job by the time I get back from Holden Village, I may not. A lot of the kinds of fears and apprehensions and a lot of the, you know, the emphasis on, well, if the world is going to pot, at least I will try to carve out my arena of self-fulfillment, and particularly that arena of self-fulfillment that is somehow connected with who I am as a sexual being. So a lot of things shaking around us, whether it's the economy, whether it's the world order, which certainly is much different than it was 5 years ago, whether it has to do with the changing nature of families, changing sex roles, a changing social order that causes very different kinds of reactions in people. On the one hand, for some people, that results in a quest for greater freedom from rules. I want to do my own thing. An intensified quest for who we are as sexual beings. Whereas for other people, that kind of social milieu results in a feeling of needing to nail down some constants, especially when the social order and all the things I've been able to rely on in the past are being jerked out from underneath, and the ground is shifting, when it seems as though we're having one metaphorical earthquake after another, in some places in the country, literal earthquakes too, when not much can be depended on. And in the face of that, then, the tendency that some have is to turn to sexual rules and expectations that are absolutes, that are God-given, that are unchangeable. And a feeling that, well, at least this is one arena where we can have some control over our lives when everything else is shifting. You know, the problem is we look around, we say, well, you know, it's not just a matter of what kind of self-discipline I will have over my own sexuality, but it's also, that very quickly becomes a matter, well, how can I also make sure that there's some pretty firm control over others and some of the strains of judgmentalism that come through. It's really devastating at times to read some of the responses that I've read in recent weeks and just to feel the pain and the vehemence and the anger and the outrage. People saying, talk on it. You know, we've got to take control of the situation. We've got to return to these absolutes. And one can almost read between the lines, and sometimes it's even explicit. Well, you know, before we could blame all of our problems on the communists. Now we can't blame our problems on the communists, those enemies out there. And in many cases, gay and lesbians become the new stand-ins for the communists, a new group that we can blame. You know, if it weren't for all that promiscuity, all that breaking up of the family, all this, all that, if it weren't for all that, we could have peace and security and predictability again. Some respondents have also said, well, you know, why does this study talk about gender hierarchies? You know, it's like, well, you know, what does this have to do with women? You know, which is very interesting, seeing that for so much of the church's history, matters related to sexuality came up when women came up, and women being associated so pervasively with sexuality. Or others who say, well, sexual abuse, well, yeah, that's a non-issue. We're all against sexual abuse. I'm glad there's something in this study that doesn't stir up much controversy. And yet some of those same respondents will, a little bit later, make it very clear that for them, sexuality and control, or sexuality and exercising power and control over the sexual expression of others, is indeed a very key issue in terms of their own posture on these issues. So for some, the problem in relationship to what's going on in society today, and I'm feeling the need to paint with some pretty broad brush strokes, because I see that many of the dynamics that we're facing having to do with sexuality are related to a lot of these wider social currents in our society. For some, the problem is that there is simply too much control over people's sexuality, particularly male control over women's sexuality. And for others, the problem is that of too little control, too little discipline. And that's why we have the social chaos that we have, and the breakdown of the family, and the breakdown of the social order, and the eruption of what feels like, to many, forms of social anarchy. So some are outraged about the tyranny of absolutism, and they would be people who reminded us, like I suppose I've been to some degree this evening, of the historical nature of sexuality, how things have changed, and the extreme of that concern would be to say, well, there really aren't any constants. And on the other hand, there are those who are outraged about the tyranny of relativism, and who see a specter of relativism in any questioning of some of the rules or some of the principles or some of the standards that we've had in the past. And immediately the charge goes up, well, what you're advocating is anything goes. Anything goes with no moorings, no principles, no standards, no values to anchor us. Subjectivism in the extreme, if it feels good, it must be okay. One of the things that I think is really disturbing is the exaggerated fears that one or the other of these two voices have of what the other one is about. And so there's all kinds of charges, you know, when you begin to say, well, you know, maybe we need to re-examine how we have evaluated gay and lesbian sexual activity, or, you know, what about 80-year-olds who refuse, who say we simply cannot get married legally because of the economic penalty, namely we'll lose pensions, Social Security, or whatever. You know, just raising questions of, you know, well, should the church perhaps consider blessing some of those unions? For some people, opening the gate a little bit means you're giving in to moral relativism to the nth degree. And certainly there are others, and believe it or not, we've also heard from some of these voices who say, well, you know, here you go, saying, well, marriage is normative and this and that, and well, you know, don't talk so much about monogamy and all the rest. Yes, those voices too are in our church. Maybe not as numerous or as vociferous as some of the other kind that we hear from. What I'd like to do is turn to, I'm going to have three people read a paragraph here. You have one right there, page 10. We're going to set forth three different voices of people and then just spend a little time talking about this in terms of why sexuality is such a big issue in our society from your perspective. Page 10, and it's the shaded boxes. We'll just go around the first box, the middle box, the man here in the middle, and the third box over there. These are three different voices, just to indicate some of the array of how people see the disorders and confusion in our society regarding sexuality.
The changes aren't all bad. God created us to enjoy our sexuality. Whatever its negative effects may be, sexually explicit material can help people get in touch with their sexuality and develop healthier sexual relationships with others. Individuals have rights, including the right to make their own sexual decisions. Sexual behavior is an individual's private matter. If you're not hurting another person, what's wrong with having sexual intercourse outside of marriage with someone you genuinely love? Surely it isn't right to insist that two people stay married when they are making each other miserable.
Morality is breaking down in our nation. We need to return to clear teachings and about what is right and wrong. Permissiveness and the idea that individual fulfillment or happiness is the most important thing is false. What's good for me is okay does not make good ethics. Families are the foundation of society. We have forgotten about the well-being of our communities, which suffer when egotism and selfishness are given free rein. We will be a more stable and healthy society if we follow the clear moral rules set down by God in Scripture.
We need to draw upon the Christian faith for guidance on manners of sexuality, but that's not a simple task. Social and economic factors beyond our personal control or our private morality contribute to the breakup of families and related problems. Morality is connected to all of life. It doesn't just consist in following rules that were created in another time and place. We've got to respond to where people are today. People, the young and not so young, are trying to cope the best they can with challenges unknown to previous generations. They deserve some credit for surviving. It's amazing that so many have developed healthy, fulfilling, long-lasting relationships.
What are your responses? Can you identify with some of those voices?
When you picked me to write the right paragraph, I'll speak up, because I do believe in what's being said here. Individuals have the right to their own choices and shouldn't be persecuted or put down or excommunicated or whatever because of their decision on a sexual basis, as long as they're not hurting anyone else.
Okay. How about some other perspectives? What do you identify as the most critical matters regarding sexuality, or what this is either an indication of, or a cause of, or a symptom of? What thoughts do you have on these matters?
Like the third one, it's so Lutheran. middle of the road, kind of. But, you know, I have my own standards for me, and I'm responsible for me. But I don't want to judge somebody else for making a different decision. What might be right for them may not be right for me. And I want to be open to what they need to do.
I'm sort of thinking about the question of how far you can actually go on matters of sexuality. I mean, I class myself as being celibate, and I lived in a celibate community for about 6 months. And I suppose I saw insights into celibacy. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see a more positive input given to things like celibacy. Mm-hmm. Because I think, I'm sure that celibacy could be something just as fulfilling mm-hmm. as what marriage is. Mm-hmm. But as
celibacy conscious. As a way of living out one's sexuality, not yes. as a way of closing down.
Yes, right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Things like deep relationships with other people. Because, I mean, we all need relationships. We all need to relate to each other, but I'm sort of very conscious how far you can actually go with your own sexuality, mm-hmm. as far as genital intercourse or not, mm-hmm. and that's certainly something that's being debated about in the Church of England at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, do we accept people living together or not, mm-hmm. as the case may be. Mm-hmm. So I mean, as I was hearing each of those passages, I was becoming aware of thinking, well, how far are we committed to go? Mm-hmm. I know myself how far, you know, I would go. Mm-hmm. But then again, I'm aware of what's sort of being said mm-hmm. at the moment.
Others?
As a Christian community, what bounds you to be set? What, in the Ten Commandments, to what extent do we that choose to believe in those, do we have to accept certain things? It's,
you're saying there's we're not without standards. Is that part of what you? We're not without standards. Is that
right.
what you're trying to?
And is that the process that you're trying to go through? Is to set standards or to just in the Christian community, are there standards to be set? And you set.
That's basically what we're going to be grappling with the rest of the week. You know, how do we as Christians approach these issues? I mean, today is what's more a matter of looking at kind of the waterfront of some basic understandings of sexuality and how that's changed. But yeah, that's how we look at it. Part of the difficulty, and I should have said this when I was saying something about the changing phenomena of sexuality, is.
And we'll come in tomorrow night's discussion, or tomorrow afternoon's discussion too, is matters that we normally think of as referring to sexuality in Scripture, as Bill Countryman has said in his book Dirt, Greed, and Sex, most of those issues come up under the topics of purity and property. In other words, a lot of what we associate in the Bible with matters of regulating of sexual behavior have to do with what is clean and unclean, the purity kinds of issues, or the property matters. Who owns who? I mean, for example, the matter of adultery, it's, you know, adultery wasn't a problem for women, it was a problem for men, because it was, you know, having something to do with another man's wife. Not something to do, having sexual activity, engaging in sexual activity with another man's wife because of who she was the property of. And so that's part of the difficulty of is looking at that biblical material and say, hey, you know, how do we work through that material? How do we find some central core values that are a part of our life as Christians that do transcend time to some degree. Now, some would say, well, there's very few that do. Others would say there's a lot that go beyond time and place and that continue to be relevant for us today. Let me just say, just in case some of you sneak out early, that if you have the booklet, I would really encourage you to read chapter 2 because it discusses a number of biblical passages, you know, including some of them that I think you're referring to. Because what I think we see in Scripture is a continual account of the people of God grappling with these issues in the face of the situations that they were facing and the pressures that they were facing in their day, including, you know, what the surrounding culture was telling them. You know? So there's a lot of things that are similar, even though some of the answers may not always be identical with what they came up with at that point. But we'll get more into some of that tomorrow. Let me just conclude by mentioning an irony that I think we've already touched upon in terms of some of the comments that you've mentioned, and that is that sexuality is both a very private and, in our day, a very public reality. It's private in that it continues to be a topic that is difficult to talk about because it involves the most intimate aspects of our lives, the most self-revealing arena of our lives, that place, that aspect of ourselves where we are most vulnerable, and therefore it is risky to talk about. There's a lot of fears that come to the fore when we think of sexuality. It's risky to talk about, including in many cases with one's own sexual partner. Talking about it in church groups is certainly something we haven't been used to doing. I think one of the most heartening things we've gotten in terms of feedback is a number of congregations who might have real problems in one way or another with something they read in here, but say, hey, what it really helped with was to get us talking about these issues. And that maybe is the most important thing that we need to be about at this point in time. Because certainly the media is filled with references to sexuality. It's a very private phenomena, and yet it is extraordinarily public in our society. The incredible increase in sexually explicit dialogue and activity, even on network television, things that would have never appeared on network television even 5 years ago are regularly appearing during prime time television viewing time.
Have you seen Portrait of a Marriage, Masterpiece Theater?
No, I haven't. Is that what I was? Okay.
The Red Shoes Diary.
It was on Minneapolis PBS last Sunday and the Sunday before.
And certainly the commercialization of sexuality. There's a very real sense in which sexuality is seen as making big bucks, higher profits. It sells. And so sexuality so easily becomes captive to other ends, and this is my kind of closing remark. Not only the other ends of self-gratification or popularity or acceptance, particularly I think this becomes an issue in terms of teenagers and young adults, but also in the end of power and control and domination over others, of which sexual abuse of various kinds is the most graphic example of this. Using sex as a means to exercise power over others. Sexuality is therefore a transmission belt for a wide variety of needs and drives. Love and anger, tenderness and aggression, intimacy and adventure, romance and predatoriness, pleasure and pain, empathy and power. And all these become intertwined in wider dynamics and issues in our society, which is why, in many senses of that word, sexuality becomes a very, very messy issue in our lives and in our society. So that's what we're going to continue to want to talk about this week. Tomorrow,
looking at some biblical perspectives. Third, trying to grapple with some, I think, some Lutheran perspectives, but it won't, I don't think the conversation will be unintelligible to those of you who aren't Lutheran. Thursday, we'll be talking about gay lesbian persons and the church. And then on Friday, the quality of our sexual relationships. What does it mean to talk about an ethic that takes very seriously the quality and not only the matter of the structure of the relationship? So those are some of the things we'll be talking about this week.